Okay. Okay, so today's share we are continuing on with our with the principle of Davar Sheinu Tzkavein. So let's just spend a few moments recapping from last week, and then we'll get to today's discussion. Last week we introduced the general principle of Davar Sheinu Tzkavein. A person wants to do an activity that in and for itself is perfectly permissible, but there's a possibility that if you do this act, which is mutter, it may cause a secondary act of iser. The classic case is the Gemara in Beitza on Daf Chav Gimel, where a person wants to drag a chair outside on Shabbos. You want to transport the chair to a new location by dragging it on Shabbos. Now, dragging a chair is technically perfectly permissible, but there's a possibility if you drag a chair out on the earthen floor, you may make a groove in the ground, which would perform the melacha of chorish. And so the question becomes, are you allowed to do activity A, which in and for itself is perfectly permissible, like dragging the chair, in light of the fact that it may cause activity B, which is aser, like making grooves in the ground? That's the shaila of the sugya. We pass in like Rabbi Shimon that this is perfectly permissible. This is what's called a davar she'eino mitzkavein, that since you're not having kavana for the secondary act, I'm just having kavana for activity A, I'm just trying to drag the chair, I'm not having kavana for the secondary effect, it is perfectly permissible. We pointed out last week that on a philosophical level, on a conceptual level, there's actually a deep concept going on here in Reb Shimon. He's having a certain interesting take on the concept of Isurim, that when the Torah set up the system of Isurim, according to Reb Shimon, to violate an Isur is not just about doing an activity. The act alone is not sufficient to violate the Isur. You have to do it with Kavana. The act with Kavana is what the Torah prohibited. The Torah, it's like saying the Torah didn't care if you do a happenstance, you know, act without Kavana. It's a focused act. The focused act is what was prohibited by the Torah when it set up the system of Isur. So if you don't have Kavana for activity B, if I'm not having Kavana to make a hole in the ground, even if that ends up happening, even though I did the act, which was Asur, since I didn't have Kavana, it's perfectly permissible. That's the concept behind the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, which, as I say, it's a deep idea on a conceptual idea, philosophical also, about the concept of the Isurim in the Torah. Now, just one last point of Chazara from last week before we get to the discussion tonight, and that is the concept of Psik Resha. We saw last week that the major qualification to the Shita of Reb Shimon is a scenario where it's inevitable, that Reb Shimon only said his heter in a case where it's possible that the secondary Isur will occur, but it's not definitive. If you do activity A, which is mutter, like dragging the chair, and it's only possible that a groove will be made, but it's not definitive, that's where we have the heter of Davar Sheinu Tzkavein. But if it's a psik resha, it's absolutely inevitable that doing activity A of heter will definitely cause a consequence of iser, then even Reb Shimon agrees that this is prohibited. This is called the principle of psik resha. And as we explained last week, on a basic level, the idea is that in a case of psik resha, even though the guy is claiming he's only having kavana for activity A, I'm only having kavana to drag, let's say, a heavy bench. Let's say the case of Psik Resha, just the Chazara case would be if you want to drag a heavy bench outside on Shabbos, and that's inevitable, it's definitive, dragging a really heavy bench is going to make a groove in the ground. So in that case, Reb Shimon agrees that this is Asur to do. Why is this Asur? So the basic idea is that since it's inevitable that dragging a heavy bench is going to make a groove in the ground, so we consider it like there's Kavana on activity B. It's treated like he's having Kavana to make a groove in the ground, and therefore it's Asur to do. So that was just a quick synopsis of what we saw last week, the general heter of Davar Sheinu Tzkavein and the big time qualification of Psik Resha. Now, tonight, we come on to another aspect of the sugya, which is considered to be very, very famous in Yonam. Tonight's discussion is all classic stuff. It's really, I guess, Rosh Malamus would really call this stuff. Okay. Fine. So today's discussion begins with a halacha brought down by the Balatrumos. The Balatrumos states the following, then it's also brought in Mordechai, that let's say there is a hot summer day and there are bugs flying around a chest. You can't close the chest on Shabbos because you're going to trap flies inside the chest. Trapping bugs on Shabbos, tracking creatures on Shabbos fits under the Malacha of Tzad. That's one of our Lama Tes Malachas. If you trap a fly in the chest, you're performing Malacha Tzad. That is going to be prohibited. Now, although in this case, you're not closing the chest in order to trap the flies, you're presumably doing it for some ulterior purpose. But since it's inevitable that doing activity A of closing the chest will cause activity B of trapping the flies, therefore this is also based on the principle of Psik Resha. So that is the Isser, that is the halacha brought down by the Sefer HaTrumah. comes along the tour, and the tour critiques the Sefer Truma. Now, there's a lot of ambiguity as to what exactly the tour is saying in arguing on the Sefer Truma. So we're going to work with the explanation of the Taz. This is one of the most famous Tazes in the entire set of Taz, this Taz right here. And he has an explanation of the tour, which is extremely yesodistic. So that's the mahalach we're going to go with right now. Says the tour is explained by the Taz, that although it might be true, if you're 100% certain that's a fly in a chest, so you shouldn't close the chest because you're going to be trapping a fly, but ein tzarich lidaktik b'zeh, you don't have to be so meticulous and cautious about this issue. Because in a general situation where you're not absolutely certain that there's a fly in the chest, we can apply the heter of davar she'ein miskaven. Listen, I want to do activity A of closing the chest. For whatever reason, I'm closing this chest. It's possible that there are flies inside already that are going to get trapped, but it's not definitive. There might not be flies. They're swarming around, but it's not absolutely certain that there are flies inside the chest. So since it's not certain that activity B is going to actually take place, we can apply the heter of davar she'ein miskaven. So you don't have to be so meticulous about this iser. That is the tour's critique on the Sefer HaTruma. Now, just to point out, a very practical example of this machlokes would be, let's say a person has a garbage can outside on Shabbos, and there are bugs, there are flies swarming around the garbage can. Is it permissible to close the lid of the garbage can in light of the fact that you might be trapping flies inside the garbage? So the starting point in analyzing the shailas are machlokes between Sefer HaTruma and the tour. According to the Sefer HaTruma, there may be an issue in this situation. You might be trapping flies inside the garbage can. Whereas according to the tour, you don't really have to be so meticulous about this. As long as it's not 100% that a fly is going to get caught inside the garbage, so it'll be perfectly permissible. So working with the Taz, and on this issue, we are makel, what you would do is you would shoo away the flies, just to do some hishtadlis here to make sure it's not an absolute psik ratio, shoo away the flies, and then we can say it's not certain a fly is going to get caught, and you can close the garbage can on Shabbos. So that's just a practical application of this machlokes. Yeah.
How does going buster the result, not the action?
The Taz, okay, so we're going to start. Okay, you're saying good. Penny's starting to analyze the Taz. Let's do it together, though. Yeah. So Shalom is asking, what if you shoot them away, but there's still some left? So obviously, an assessment needs to be made if there really is a psik resha, but as long as we can get to the point where we're not 100%. What is that? No, sure. Presumably, if you do a quick shoe and you close it, we would say it's not absolutely certain that's going to get in. There are other tactics we can do if we need to. Maybe put a small thing inside, just leave a little space open. There are other maneuvers, but this is just the typical off the cuff. So you just quickly shoe and close it. So then we would say there's not a psik resha, and then it would be permissible. Okay. Comes along Rabbi Akiva Eger, and as I say, every single Marmakom tonight's share is all very, very famous. And Rabbi Akiva Eger makes a very famous observation about this Taz. Anyone who takes Rabbi Sachs Faheris for Smicha, this is like this Rabbi Akiva Eger and this Taz is all like, one of the first questions you're going to get on his Faheris. So comes along Rabbi Akiva Eger, and Rabbi Akiva Eger makes the following observation on this Taz. He says that the Taz may have overstepped his bounds, that the Taz's application of the heter of davar she'ein miskaven is not pashut at all, because there's a fundamental difference between the classic case where we apply the heter of davar she'ein miskaven and this situation here with the fly in the chest, and an argument can be made that we don't apply the heter of davar she'ein miskaven in this situation. What's the distinction? So he says like this, that in a typical case of davar she'ein miskaven, right, I want to do activity A, which in and for itself is permissible, but it may cause activity B, which is asur. Where's my uncertainty stemming from as to if activity B is going to happen? Why am I misupik if the isur is going to end up happening? I'm lacking information about the future. I don't know how activity A is going to play out in the future and if it'll end up causing activity B. Let's say when I want to drag a chair outside on Shabbos, a light chair, and so there's no psik resha, and it's on an earthen floor. So I want to do activity A of dragging a chair, and it's possible that it may cause a groove in the ground. Why am I uncertain as to if the groove is going to be caused? Where is my uncertainty stemming from? It's stemming from lack of information about the future. How is it going to play out? When I decide to do activity A, what's going to happen when I decide to drag the chair? Will it make a groove? Will it not make a groove? That's the typical case of davar she'ein miskaven. You're lacking information about the future. In contrast to that, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, in the case of the Taz,
So the suffix is pertaining not to the future, but it's based on lacking information about the past. I want to do activity A of closing this chest. I want to close this chest, which in and for itself is permissible. It's possible that there's a fly inside the chest or inside the garbage can that will get trapped in the garbage. Now, why is it uncertain if there is indeed going to be a malachat tzad taking place, trapping of the fly? I'm lacking information about the past. I don't know if before I close this garbage, is there a fly inside this chest? If there's a fly inside the chest, it's going to get trapped. If there's no fly inside the chest, it's not going to get trapped. Says Rabbi Kivegar, when you're lacking information about the past, we may not apply the heter of Davarshin Miskavin. Maybe we should only apply it when we're lacking information about the future. When we're lacking information about the past, maybe we should treat this as a regular suffix iser. Listen, I don't know. Is this act aser? Is this act mutter? Can I close the chest? Can I not close the chest? Will this cause an iser? Will this not cause an iser? Let's just apply the classic rules of suffix deraisa lechumra. That is the argument of Rav Kivegar, the distinction he wants to make between lacking info about the future and lacking info about the past. Yeah.
How can you say this is still information about the future? Because you could say that while you're closing the lid, you don't know if the fly is going
to
get out.
Okay, so Yonah's asking a question. I was actually very careful I phrased it to deal with Yonah's question. Yep. This is a very fair point. Yonah was understanding that we have some flies hovering around the top of the chest, and we're just not sure when I close it, will I end up, sectioning one into the chest and trapping it. That in a chanami might be a suffix about the future. The way you're expressing that is I'm closing it. Right, exactly. Same way. But either way, that would be more future based. But I phrase it differently on purpose, because this is how they all say it. They phrase it as, is there a fly inside the chest already? Let's say, are there a few flies already inside that are just going to stay there? And there's certainly,
there is a fly inside.
So there's no ambiguity. It's low enough that there's no ambiguity that when I close it, it'll get out. It's just, is there a fly or not? So you're absolutely hitting the nail on the head and a very sharp point in this analysis. I phrase it in a certain way on purpose, because that's how they discuss it. So it's a fair point. It's just not the way they talk about it. Okay. Now, Rav Kivegar brings a precedent to this distinction from a halacha brought down by the Ramah in Yerodeya. And this is why this is on Rabbi Snacks' Basar B'Chalav here, because we're now entering Hilchos Basar B'Chalav for Rabbi Kivegar's validation to this distinction. But I see a hand up on Zoom. So let's pause for a second. Yeah. Mer.
Yeah. Aren't flies Eino B'Mino Nitzot? So just be a Durabana and stick it from the
pool. Mayor, just you totally hit the nail on the head there. I was trying to, trick you all. I need to point out Mayor's point. Mayor pointed out that flies are in the minonitsa, which means it's only an issue the rabban to catch flies. That is 100% accurate. That's exactly what the Bir Halacha says, the Mishnah Berurah says. So at the end, I'll mention point that out. At the very end, we're going to get to Mayor's point. You're 100% correct that I phrased it as Safik Daraisa L'Chumra. Technically, in this case, it might end up being a subject of Rabbanan, which would change everything. I just don't want to overconfuse it at this second, but Emir Tishan, that was an excellent, excellent point. Beautiful point. Yeah.
So, what constitutes a trap? Like, what if you have a room, right, a fly, I'm not sure if there's a fly that can...
Okay, so Ellie is asking, at what point is it not called say that anymore? So, like, we have small garbage cans, big garbage cans, the whole room. The general idea is there are kind of three categories for tzad. If it's, you can get it in one grasp, that's typically considered to be a smaller area, which is generally subject to tzad b'deraisa. If it's, you can't get it in one lunge, but it's still confined to some degree, then that would be tzad d'rabanan. And if it's such a big room, like this room, a fly, I can't get it in one grasp, and you wouldn't even call a fly constricted in this type of room, so then it would be permissible. So those are the three categories, but I don't want to get too complicated inside. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Depends on the size of the animal and size of the container. So to be honest.
Maya's question, couldn't we just say that it was like closing the door on a room in the day or night or something like that?
From Maya's question?
Yeah. Then it's
more direct. Yeah, no, but the case they're discussing is flies. So Shalom's trying to answer Maya's question, let's change it from a fly to an animal. You're right. That would change the halacha, but they're discussing flies. So Maya hit a good point there. Fine. Yeah.
Are we talking about
Yes, so right now we're discussing Sfeikos and Metzius. Yeah. Is there a fly inside the box? No, yeah, Suffolk and Din is more complicated, but yeah. The Suffolk and Metzius is typical Suffolk. Okay. Fine. So now Ricky Vega brings a precedent to his halacha from a din brought down by the Ramah in Yerodeya in Hilchos Basar B'Chala. The Ramah is bringing down a Shilta Yigiburim, who states the following din. He says, let's say you have a Goyish worker in your house, and they have their own pots to cook their food in, and they have their treif pots on the fire they're cooking. Says the Ramah that you should not stoke the coals under the pot that's being cooked, the goyish pot that's on the treif pot that's on the stove. Don't stoke the coals under the pot. Why shouldn't you stoke the coals under the pot? So this is based on a concern for cooking basar b'chalav. We know that last week's parsha, aside from the fact that there's an isser to eat basar b'chalav, right. So technically, last week's parsha is the first time it came up. So technically, we need to find the third time to really get the isser bishul. But okay, right. Exactly. First halacha. So we have basar, whatever. Yeah. So whatever the mukor is, aside from the isser to eat basar b'chalav, there's also an isser deraisa to cook basar b'chalav. Now, in this situation, when you have this goyish pot, this treif pot on the stove, so we should be concerned. Maybe within the last 24 hours, this pot was used to cook both meat and milk. Maybe last night the goy cooked a treif stew, a meat stew, and maybe this morning he cooked some milk in it. And so we now have absorptions of meat and absorptions of milk inside the walls of this pot. We have blios of basar, blios of challah. When you now stoke the coals of this pot, so you're going to cause a cooking of the absorptions inside the walls of the pot, and therefore you're going to be cooking basar b'chalav. So says the Ramah, don't stoke the coals under a pot, a treifa pot, lest you come to cook basar b'chalav. That's a din brought down by the Ramah in Hilchos Basar B'chalav. Comes along Reb Kiveger, and Reb Kiveger asks, it's our same Reb Kiveger, he asks on the Ramah, he says, what's going on? Why are you asering stoking the coals under this pot? Why don't we apply the classic hetter of Dover She'eino Miskaven? Listen, in this situation, why is the Jew stoking the coals? So the assumption is he's not stoking the coals because he wants to cook basar b'chalav. He's stoking the coals for some ulterior purpose. What would be an ulterior purpose? So one purpose might be if he wants to heat up his apartment. Back in the day, so their ovens served the dual purpose of serving as a heat source and also using to cook food. So it could be he was trying to stoke the coals in order to heat up the apartment or some ulterior purpose. But he's not doing it for the sake of cooking the basar b'chalav. So he's doing activity A of stoking the coals so just to generate more heat to heat up the apartment, let's say. But there's a concern that this is going to cause activity B of cooking basar b'chalav inside the walls of this pot. Says Reb Kiveger, listen, it's not definitive that you're going to cook basar b'chalav inside this pot. Maybe there are absorptions inside the pot. Maybe there aren't absorptions inside the pot. So why don't we apply the classic heter of Dover She'eino Miskaven? Why is the Ramah being machmir on this Shaila? Why not apply the classic heter of Dover She'eino Miskaven? Yeah.
Then you're worried about
the path. Right, exactly. So you want to just hit the nail on the head. And that's the Dik of Reb Kiveger. He says, you want to know why the Ramah didn't apply the heter of Eino Miskaven? Because this is not a suffix pertaining to the future. This is a suffix pertaining to the past. Why am I uncertain as to if activity B is going to happen in this situation? Why is it not clear if basar b'chalav, if activity A of stoking the coals will cause a bishul of basar b'chalav? I'm lacking info, not about the future, but about the past. I'm not sure within the last 24 hours, was this used to cook meat and milk? If this was used to cook meat and milk, then there will be an isser of basar b'chalav. If there was no bishul, if there was not used to cook meat and milk, there won't be an issue. And so therefore it's a suffix pertaining to the past. Says Reb Kiveger, this Ramah is going to hold of our distinction from before, that the heter of Eino Miskaven only applies when we're lacking information about the future. It doesn't apply when we're lacking information about the past. Since this is pertaining to an issue of the past, we apply the classic rule of suffix, the reis of l'chumra, and therefore we're machmir and he can't do it. So that is Reb Kiveger's, his validation now to his critique of the Taz. The Taz was saying that closing the chest with the flies is an issue of, is a subject to the classic heter of Eino Miskaven. Says Reb Kiveger, it's not so pasha to apply this heter in this case. When you have a suffix pertaining to the past, maybe we don't apply Eino Miskaven, and he's validating this from this Ramah. The Ramah indeed is telling us that there's a problem of stoking the coals underneath the pot. Why is he not applying Eino Miskaven? Because it's a suffix pertaining to the past. Yeah.
Is it's only
Matthew Darshan Miskaven from the Pachavis and still from the Pachavis? Oh, no. In Wisconsin applies in Kol Tarkula. The Heter Darshan Miskaven everywhere. Everywhere. No. So Malacham HaShavis might impact, it could be we're more Makel on Shabbos. So the Shitas that are, whatever, the various Yisurim in Kultur Hul, it might be more Mekel on Shabbos, but the general Heter applies in Kultur Hul, yeah. Okay, fine. So these are the basic facts here in today's sugya. We're bringing out a new aspect of the issue of Dovrishin and Miskavin. We're pointing out that the classic cases of Inamiskavin pertain to a case where the reason you're uncertain about activity B, the secondary act of Isser, is based on lacking information about the future. And we're raising the issue, what if we're lacking info about the past? I want to do activity A, which is Mutter, and it might cause activity B, but the reason I'm unsure about activity B is based on lacking info about the past. I don't know if there's a fly in the basket, in the box already. I don't know if there's a Basar B'chalav in the pot. In this type of a case, would we apply the Heter of Inam Iskavin, or would we treat it as a classic Suffolk Isser? The Taz maintains that we always apply Inam Iskavin. It doesn't matter if you're lacking info about the future, if you're lacking about the past, we always apply the Heter of Dovrishin and Iskavin. Whereas the Ramah is maintaining that we don't hold of Inam Iskavin when it's lacking info about the past. We only apply the Heter when the issue is future-oriented. When we're lacking info about the past, we don't apply the Heter of Inam Iskavin. Okay, yeah, Ben. According to the Taz, according to the Taz, we always apply the Heter of Inam Iskavin, whether it's a Suffolk about the future or Suffolk about the past, because remember the alumnus of, it's not based on a Suffolk, just remember, if you remember the alumnus of Rav Shimon Shito, his concept of a virus is about doing an act with Kavana. And listen, I'm doing an act without Kavana. Who cares where the Suffolk pertains to, future or past? It's an act without Kavana, and therefore it's not awesome. Okay. So I'll be honest, I'm nervous to analyze this, the Hesber and the Smachlokas, because it's extremely sophisticated, but I guess we have 23 minutes left. I guess you got to live once. So we're going to discuss the Hesber and the Smachlokas. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, so my Rebbe Rav Silver, quote of Shachter, is giving the Hesber and the Smachlokas. Then I came to Landers, and her partners gave the same Hesber and the Smachlokas. And I got a little older, and I started seeing that the Achronim themselves also give the same Hesber in this machlokas. So that's why, as I say, this whole today's share is all classic stuff, all very, 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 very famous stuff. But the reason I'm nervous is because it's extremely sophisticated. So I guess it's live. That's why we get zingers. So we're going to go through it. We'll spend 10 minutes now going through the hegemon of this machlokas, and then we'll get to the practical applications. Okay. So Rav Shachter, Parnas, Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, they all wanted to connect this machlokas to our Chakira last week from Rav Elchanan. So we're going to chazer last week's Chakira from Rav Elchanan, and we're going to show how the Rosh Yeshiva all wanted to apply that to this Machlokas. And as I say, this might be the most sophisticated Hesber of the entire year, but okay, we'll do our best. So let's go back to Rav Elchanan's Chakira, and then we'll make sure we have it down, and we'll plug it into tonight's discussion. The issue from last week was pertaining to the concept of Psik Reshit. We know that Rabbi Shimon permits a Dovar Shein Miskavin. If you don't have Kavanah for activity B, so it's permissible. If it's not definitive that activity B is going to take place, then Rabbi Shimon permits a Dovar Shein Miskavin. But our big exception was the case of Psik Reisha. If it's inevitable that doing activity A will always cause activity B, that dragging a heavy bench is always going to make a groove on the ground, so then Rabbi Shimon prohibits that situation. Psik Reisha is Asur. That's the basic halacha of Psik Reisha. And the basic idea is supposed to be that in a case of Psik Reisha, since it's inevitable that activity A will always cause activity B, so in this situation, we treat it like there's Kavana. We consider it like there's Kavana in activity B. Activity B is the act of Isser, and that's why Rav Shimon prohibits Psik Reisha. That's the basic concept of Psik Reisha. But Rav Elchanan famously has a Chakira as to how to understand what are the mechanics behind how we generate Kavana on activity B. Well, Maisa, the person might take a shvuah. He said, I'm really trying to drag this bench because I'm having a kiddush on Shabbos. I'm trying to drag the bench. I'm not having kavana for activity B. Don't tell me I'm having kavana. I'm trying to drag the bench. And the fact that it's making a hole in the ground is not my kavana. So why is Psik Reisha Asur? How are we creating kavana on activity B when in Metzias the person's not having any overt intention to do activity B? That's the famous issue of Rav Elchanan. So as we discussed last week, we saw that Rav Elchanan has two basic possibilities for how to explain the concept of Psik Reisha. How are we creating Kavana and activity B? Just because it's inevitable, I'm not intending for it. So what's going on? So the first possibility was to explain that maybe since the person has awareness, he's aware of the fact that when he does activity A, it's definitely going to cause activity B. When he drags the heavy bench, it's definitely going to make a groove in the ground. So although he's claiming that he's not intending to do activity B, but deep in the recesses of his mind, there's a certain subconscious acceptance, there's a certain subconscious intention on activity B, and that's classified as kavan. Since you know for a fact that A is going to cause B, so whom are you lying to? You're telling me you're not having kavanah for B. Deep down in the recesses of your mind, there's a certain acceptance of activity B, maybe a subconscious intention, and therefore that should be classified as kavanah. That's the first side in Rav Hanan's Chakira for how we generate kavanah on activity B when it's inevitable. So deep down, you're really having kavanah for activity B. The second side in Rav Hanan's Chakira was to explain that that's not how psych ratio works. We're not going to start doing a psychoanalysis. We'll let the Lander psych majors work on that. But for our purposes, like if the guy's telling us he's not having intention for activity B, so we're not going to start playing games and telling him that it really is having intention for activity B. That's not what's going on in the case of psych ratio. So if the person is not having kavana for activity B, why is psych ratio also? How do we generate kavana on activity B if we're not applying his kavana to activity B? What's going on with psych ratio? So the second side of Rav Hanan's Chakira is to say that since activity A always causes activity B, dragging a heavy bench always makes a hole in the ground. Legally speaking, they're not called two activities. They're called the exact same activity. If A always causes B, then A equals B. Sorry to bring up math stuff again, but right, if A always causes B, then A equals B. They're the exact same activity. Dragging a heavy bench is the same thing as making a hole in the ground. They're not two separate acts. They're considered to be the exact same act. There's a fusion, there's a merging of activity A and activity B. So if we now merge activity A and activity B, then by definition, when you have kavanah on A, it's kavanah on B, because B is included in A. If you tell me you're having kavanah to drag a heavy bench, then you're having kavanah to make a hole in the ground, because making a hole in the ground is included in activity A of dragging a bench. They're the exact same activity. So this is the famous Chakira of Rav Hanan. Two basic approaches in psych ratio. How do we get kavanah on activity B? The person's not having any overt intention to make a hole in the ground. He's just trying to drag a heavy bench. The first thought is to say, since the person has an awareness that A always causes B, so deep down in the recesses of his mind, there's some subconscious, some subliminal intention on activity B. You can't lie to yourself. If you know what's going to happen, then anan sadi, you're having kavanah, you're having a certain subconscious intention on activity B. The second thought is to say that we're not having any subconscious intention on activity B. He's only having kavanah on A. But since A always causes B, so they're called the exact same act. B is included in A. A equals B. So kavanah on A is kavanah on B. Now, can anyone figure this one out here? Why this chakira is going to be mazbir ar machlokas Taz versus the Rama. We had a machlokas haposkim tonight. If I want to, if you have a case of ena miskavin, I'm going to do activity A. That may cause activity B, and I'm lacking information about the past. I don't know if there's basar b'chalav inside this pot, let's say. I'm not sure if there's a fly inside this chest. So I'm going to do activity A of closing the chest, and it may cause activity B of trapping a fly inside the chest. And I'm lacking info about the past. Why am I uncertain as to if there's a fly inside the chest? Because I don't know information about the past. So can anyone see why Rav Hanan's Chakira would be masbir this machlokas? This is really this is like Talmud 103 here. Yeah. What? See, you are right, but can you elaborate? Can someone elaborate on that? Yeah. Therefore what? Okay, so you're starting. Yeah, you're starting. Good, good. On the other side? Good. Okay, Ben hit the nail on the head. I think we should give him shlishi this week. Fine. Okay, so let's just plug in. Let's just spell out what Ben just said. This is how Rav Shechter's Mavis, Machlokas, Rav Parnas, Rav Shmuel Rizowski. They're all Ramaz with this Machlokas, exactly what Ben just said. So let's go through the two tzadim in the Chakira. Starting with the first side in Rav Hanan's Chakira, that how does psik ratio work? That when I have kavana on A, and it's inevitable that A causes B, so since I have that awareness, since I know that A always causes B, so there's a certain subconscious acceptance asserting subconscious intention to do activity B. That's the first sad in his chakira. If that's how psik resha works, so as long as I'm not aware that B will definitely happen, I'm not having kavana on B. I only have kavana on B when there's awareness. When I know that it's inevitable that B is going to happen, so then I have a subliminal intention on B. But as long as I am unaware that A is not necessarily going to cause B, I'm not aware that B is definitely going to happen, then that's called a davar she'eino miskaven. I'm not having kavana on B. So who cares if the reason I'm a sopik is about the future or about the past? I don't know something about the future. I don't know something about the past. Either way, I am unaware that A causes B. I'm not sure if closing the chest is going to trap a fly. I'm not sure that dragging a chair is going to make a hole in the ground. As long as the person is not aware that A causes B, he's not sure that B is going to happen, then you can't make the subconscious intention on B. Because once again, the whole way we create kavan on B in the first side is his awareness. Since deep down, you know that it's going to happen, so whom are you lying to? You're going to tell me not having kavana when you know it's going to happen? So as long as you don't know what's going to happen, then we can't say you have kavana on B. So who cares if his lack of awareness is stemming from the future, stemming from the past? Either way, he is not having this awareness, so we can't say he's having subliminal intent. So that's the hezer behind the shita of the Taz. The Taz says that we always apply davar shen miskaven. Who cares if my suffix is about the future, my suffix is about the past? As long as A doesn't always cause B, it's perfectly permissible to do. I can close the chest with flies inside the chest with a suffix, if I'm not sure if there's a fly inside the chest. It doesn't matter. Since I am not aware that A will definitely cause B, you can't say I'm having a subliminal intention because I'm not aware. It's all about the person's awareness. In this case, as long as he's masupik, wherever the suffix stems from, you can't say that he's having the subliminal intention as a davar she'eino miskaven. So that's the classic hezra that's given for the shita of the Taz. Moving over to the second side in the chakira, and this is really the harder side. So the Rosh Hashiva explained as follows. What was the second standard of Lachan's chakira? That how do we create kavana on B in psik resha? That since A always causes B, if activity A in mitzias always causes B, dragging a heavy chair always causes a hole in the ground, so they're not called two activities, they're called the exact same activity. If A always causes B, A equals B. And so Mamela, when I have kavana on A, it's kavana on B because B and A are the exact same thing. If you go with the second side in the chakira, so now it comes out differently. Because let's analyze the case with a fly in the chest. We have a suffix. I want to close this chest. And I have a suffix. Is there a fly in the chest? Is there not a fly in the chest? Now, on the side of this suffix, that there ends up being a fly in this chest, it's going to come out that every single time you close this chest, the fly is going to be trapped. If it turns out that there is actually a fly in this chest, it will come out that A always causes B. Closing the chest will always trap a fly. If that's the case, then on the side that there's a fly inside this chest, there's now going to be a merging of activity A and activity B. Since activity A always causes B, closing the chest always traps the fly. That means that A and B are now the same activity, and I'm having kavana on activity B. So if it turns out that there's a fly inside this chest, then we now have a psik resha, A always causes B, and I'm having kavana on B, this is asur to do. Now, this is only a suffix. That's all inside that there is a fly in this chest. If there's no fly in this chest, then it's obviously perfectly permissible to close the chest. There's no problem closing a chest if there's no fly in the chest. So using the second side of Rochan's Chakira, we now have a suffix isser here. On the one hand, if there is a fly in the chest, then A always causes B. Closing the chest always traps a fly. If that's the case, we're now going to merge these two activities. A and B become the same exact activity. Kavana on A is kavana on B. That is usher to do. If there's no fly in the chest, then there's nothing wrong at all. It's perfectly permissible. So we now have suffix isser. Suffix, was there a fusion of activity A and activity B, and this is usher? Suffix, there's no isser at all because there's no fly in the chest. Suffix deraisa luchumra. So this is how the Rosh Hashiva famously analyzed this issue. According to the second side in the Chakira, and this is the real brilliance here, it comes out we have a suffix isser. On the side that there is a fly in the chest, there's a fusion of A and B because A always causes B, and there's kavan, it's asr. If there's no fly in the chest, it's perfectly permissible. Suffix isser, suffix deraisa luchumra. So that's all the analysis of this machlokas. I just want to quickly summarize what we did, and then I want to get to practical applications. So just to quickly summarize, we kind of had two parts of today's shiur. Part one, we just laid out the facts, which was the issue of where does the heter of enem iskaven apply? Does it only apply to sphakos in the future, or does it also apply to sphakos in the past? If I want to do activity A, which is intrinsically mutter, and I might cause activity B, which is usser, so is this heter of enem iskaven, does it even apply if my reason I'm uncertain about activity B stems from lacking information about the past? I don't know that there's a fly in the chest. I don't know if this was used for Vassar B'chol in the last 24 hours. Do we apply the heter in this situation or not? The Taz says that we do apply the heter, whereas the Ramah says that we don't apply the heter. So those are just the facts in the sugya, and that's really all you really need to come out with tonight. But for part two, so I didn't want to hold back. I presented the way that the Rosh Yeshiva explained this machlokas. They connected to Rav Chanan's Chakira. They explain that if you go like the first time in the Chakira, that the way we generate Kavanah through Psik Resha is through the person's awareness. If you are aware that A causes B, that's how you get Kavanah on B. But as long as you're not aware that A causes B, then you're not having subliminal intent. So who cares where your lack of awareness is coming from, whether it's from the future, whether it's from the past. Either way, I'm not aware. So you can't tell me I'm having a subliminal intent when in my mind, it's a suffix, it's going to be permissible. Whereas if you go look at the second sound in the Chakira, this whole fusion idea, it comes out when you have a suffix about the past, we're going to have a suffix iser. On the side that there really is basa b'chol, on the side that there is a fly in the chest, there's going to be a fusion and it's usser. On the side that there's no fly in the chest, it's permissible. Suffix iser, suffix deraisa l'chumra. Now, I just want to get over, Mary, I see your question, but I want to get to the halakhic shaylas here. Okay. Fine. So I just want to spend the last 8 minutes to go through two applications of this analysis. Okay, the first application of this issue is also a very famous issue that comes up in the postkim, and that is as follows. Rishmalvis hates the word famous. It's classic. That's a classic issue that comes up in the postkim. And that is like this. We know with the contemporary refrigerators, so they have all these cool features that happen when you open and close the refrigerator. Back in the day, so the issue was the light bulb. But nowadays, when you open and close the fridge, so like you're practically like hacking into China here with all the cool highfalutin features that happen. Maybe they're hacking on us. I take that back. With all the cool highfalutin features that happen when you open and close the refrigerator. And so it becomes necessary very often to disable the refrigerator before Shabbos. Either you tape down the knobs that get pushed in and out when you open and close the fridge, or if you're zocha to have a halaga Shabbos mode, so that also is sufficient. Now, the big classic issue that comes up in the postgame is, let's say a person, Pasha, can't remember if he disabled the refrigerator before Shabbos. It was a very hectic Friday. You're running around doing a million things, and Pasha can't remember, did I tape down the fridge or not? And so the question becomes, is it permissible, or what can the person do in this situation in terms of opening the fridge and having his delicious Friday night seuda? That's the issue that comes up in the postgame. So there are two big factors that go into analyzing this shaila. Factor number one is our machlokes tinataz versus the Rama. Because let's break down this shaila here. When you want to open the refrigerator in this situation, so I want to do activity A, which is perfectly permissible. I want to open up a fridge. Opening up a fridge is something that is perfectly permissible to do. I have a concern if I do activity A of opening the fridge, it may cause activity B of turning on a light bulb and other cool electrical features in the refrigerator. But I'm not sure that activity B is going to take place. It's a suffix. Maybe it will take place. Maybe it won't take place. Where is this suffix stemming from? Why am I uncertain if the light bulb is going to go on? This isn't a suffix pertaining to the future. This is a suffix pertaining to the past. I don't know if before Shabbos, did I disable the light bulb? Did I not disable the light bulb? So the starting point in analyzing the Shaila is our Machlokes Tinataz versus the Ramah. Is this treated as a classic heter of Darvish and Miskavin, or is this treated as a suffix iser? Starting with the Shita of the Taz, so you saw the Taz is of the opinion that we always call this Darvish and Miskavin, whether you're uncertain because of the future, whether you're uncertain because of the past, as long as A doesn't always cause B, it's perfectly permissible. So according to the Taz, it would be perfectly mutter to open up the fridge on Shabbos. That's what comes out according to the Taz. Whereas according to the Ramah, so we saw that the Ramah held that, wait a second, we can't apply the heter of enem iskaven in this type of situation. When the reason you're not sure if A is going to cause B, the reason you're not sure if B is going to happen stems from the past, you don't know before Shabbos, did you disable this? We don't apply the heter of enem iskaven. We have to treat this as a classic iser, suffix iser, which we may have to be machmir on. So that is factor number one in analyzing the shayla, whether we pass like the Taz, whether we pass like the Ramah. According to the Taz, this is Pashat Mutter, whereas according to the Ramah, this is going to be a serious issue. That is factor number one. I just want to finish it in one. Factor number two becomes the next question, which is, are we discussing an Isra Deraisa or an Isra Derabana? Because even according to the Ramah, so, and this is where Mary's point comes up, even according to the Ramah, even if you treat this as a Savik Isser, so we know the rule, Savik Deraisa Lechurma, Savik Derabana Lekula. So if opening a refrigerator involves an Isra Deraisa, so then you have to be Machber, according to the Ramah, you can't open it. But if opening a refrigerator involves an Isra Derabana, so then you can be Mako based on Savik Derabana Lekula. Listen, I don't know if the refrigerator was disabled or not. I have a suffix, am I violating an Isser or not? If that's an Isser Derabanan, so then even according to the Ramah, we could be Megal. So that is factor number two. Are we discussing an Isser Deraisa or discussing an Isser Derabanan? So what's the halacha in this situation? Opening a refrigerator, Isser Deraisa or Isser Derabanan? So what is that? So one issue depends on the light bulb, but typically speaking, nowadays, the light bulbs are LED light bulbs, which are only Isser Derabanan. If it's incandescent, so then we're done. That would be an Isser Deraisa. But if assuming it's an LED light bulb, so then that's going to be an Isser Derabanan. So the light bulb itself, typically speaking, nowadays, would be an Isser Derabanan, which is good. The issue becomes, the second issue, which is, so the electricity Shabbat, that when you open and close the fridge, you're opening and closing circuits, and we have our big time machlokas poskim on electricity. What's the halacha when it comes to using electricity on Shabbos? The two mainstream shitas are the shitas of the Chazon Ish and the Beis Yitzchak. The Chazon Ish was of the opinion that electricity is an Isser Deraisa, it's an Isser of Bona, whereas the Beis Yitzchak was of the opinion that it's only an Isser Derbanan of Molid, and then there's Rosh Hashanah who felt that really should be Mutter, but like, we're not going to be Mutter it. So the two mainstream shitas are that it's also Deraisa, like Chazon Ish, and it's also the Rabbanan like the Beis Yitzchak.
Now isn't it a
specs paper? So good. So assuming like the Beis Yitzchak, we now have a second heter in this situation. Our second heter now is that it's only an Isser Derabanan in this case. Opening a fridge, the light bulb is an LED light bulb. That's an Isser Derabanan. Electricity, according to the Beis Yitzchak, is an Isser Derabanan. So even according to the Ramah now, we could be Mekel. So as Yonah is pointing out, this is what Ravadia calls a specs fegel ahatir, that we have two different factors why this might be mutter. First of all, according to the Taz, this would be permissible. And second of all, even according to the Ramah, this might only be an Isser Derabanan, in which case it would also be permissible. So there's a pretty reasonable basis to be Mako on the Shaila because of these two considerations. First of all, we have the heter of the Taz. And second of all, we have the argument that electricity is only an Isser Derabanan, in which case we can be Mako and open the fridge. That is a reasonable analysis of the Shaila. I apologize, just we have 2 minutes left. So that would be a reasonable analysis of the Shaila. However, Rabbi Leibowitz threw a monkey wrench into this whole heter. He really, he turned this whole heter upside down. Because he made the following observation. He pointed out that even if we're makel on the Shaila and you open the fridge, so there's a 50-50 chance that you're gonna be in major trouble if you lose your gambit. Because let's say you open the fridge and the light bulb wasn't disabled. Now you did nothing wrong whatsoever because listen, it was a suffix. That's what happens when you have a suffix. We follow the rules of Hilchos Fekos and it was mutter. So you open the fridge and the light was on. You didn't disable the fridge. You did nothing wrong. You have the Taz. It was a suffix, the Rabbanan, fine. Problem becomes that you can't close the fridge because closing the fridge is no longer a suffix. Now I know Bavadas, right? Now it's a Vadai. Now the light bulb is on. Now when I close the fridge, I'm turning off the light. I'm opening circuits, that is definitely a problem. So he pointed out that although analytically there's a pretty solid basis to be Mekel, but practically speaking, unfortunately, it's not such a good idea because if you end up losing the gambit on Friday night, so your whole refrigerator is gonna not do so well over the next 24 hours being open and your food's not gonna do so well in the fridge. So it's not the best solution unless you wanna, you know, you're a man of odds here. But it's just a beautiful analysis, a practical application of our discussion tonight. Okay, so with that, we're done tonight's share. Mr. Shem, next week, we're going to get to the cool applications. This is all the principles. And the next week, we're going to go through some interesting shilas that come up in the post on segregation and Enum's Kavim.
We're
going to
have your guy or your neighbor's
work
for you.
Yeah, so a guy was always permissible. Guy is having a guy do it.
It's okay to take a chance.
Yeah, so Dove is pointing out that would be perfectly fine, that you could take the chance, and then as long as there's no COVID in the house and you can convince your neighbor to come in, that would be a solution. That would be a solution. Yes. What is that? Yeah, that would be under these circumstances, that would be fine. Yeah, that would be a fine solution, Dove solution. Yeah. Yes, that's how I'm talking about a Shabbos motor. You taped it down. Usually, when you tape the things down, so Ellie's asking if you have a refrigerator that does stuff. Then Nachanami, we're discussing. Are you saying the motor? You mean the motor? Oh, the motor. Okay, so we're gonna go through the motor, Mr. Shem, in a few weeks. We're gonna go through that's like in depth of Grama. We're opening refrigerators. Sam, yeah, Mary, you want to just.
Regarding the flies, isn't it also just a psikrisha de lo nichle?
So I just want to respond to Meir's point from before. So based on our analysis tonight, it comes out that the fly case actually should be mutter kuli ama, because the fly case involves an issur de rabbanan. As Meir pointed out, it's in b'mino nitzod. So this is how the Berel HaPaskins. That's why I said by the garbage can case, you can be mekel on the garbage can case, because that's an issur de rabbanan. So I'm not sure if there are flies inside the garbage can. I swish my hands around. And I'm not sure if there are flies inside the garbage can. So the reason we can be mekel is because according to the Taz, it's Pashat Mutter. And even according to the Ramah, this is a Safek Derabanan, and therefore Safek Derabanan Lekula. So you're just adding more fuel to the fire for why we might be mekel. But I'm just pointing out that you're absolutely correct. That's why I said Halach Lamaisa, the garbage can we can be mekel on, because we have all of our Heterim from today. Okay. Shkaref number two. Okay. Have a good Shabbos, Mary.
Shabbos.
Thank you.